From Migration Media, this is Migratory Patterns. I'm your host, Mike Shaw. What's it like to want it all? To be able to live in two worlds at once? Like several other people I've spoken with, Gabe Claremont often feels like he's rooted in two worlds, his hometown of New York and the place where he's been able to thrive professionally, Beijing. In part two of our conversation, we touch on the challenges that feeling at home in multiple places can present. What does it mean to be a New Yorker at heart, but to not feel like he has opportunity there? And why does he miss one city while he's in the other? Is he living an overseas story or a migration story? Is he living overseas because he's mission-driven, or has he been called to it? And at our core, what makes someone want to make such a leap in the first place? It's not lost on Gabe or myself that these are the kinds of challenges that only those with profound privilege have to face. But face them we must. Because even though those of us who have the agency and wherewithal to move abroad enjoy much easier access to foreign spaces than those who are feeling environmental, political, or physical danger, once we get where we're going, we are kind of dealing with pretty much the same problems. For example, for all of the privileges that many expats have, we're all still at the mercy of, as Gabe puts it, winds that we have no control over. One stupid diplomatic move here, or one too aggressive tariff there, and a host government might decide to start making things impossible for the people from the offending country who have established homes within their borders. It's definitely not the same kind of stress and fear that undocumented migrants in Western countries face, but it's also not nothing. Like I said last week, this is one of the most interesting conversations that I've had so far, and I'm eager to get you right back into it. So let's pick up my conversation with Gabe Claremont right where we left off last week. Do you see yourself as being someone who is someone who's going to live overseas, or are you someone who is like, I got to get back there?
So I realized that really the ideal situation is to stay overseas and be incredibly wealthy. And then if you have those two things going for you. But I mean, like the ideal would be to live overseas, but to have access to have real life access to New York City. You know, whenever I wanted.
Well, let me just say, I have a follow-up. I want to dig into that, but I do want to say you've kind of gone from one center of the universe to another center of the universe. I mean, it's not that there isn't a tough transition, and you know, but you've gone from America's global capital to, you know, one of China's two global capitals. So it's like, you know, there's a handful of cities in the world that are really world cities, and Beijing's one of them. And you came from one of them.
So
he went from one spotlight to the other.
And if I think about like where, like if I were to move, I'm like, yeah, like I mean like Hong Kong or London maybe, you know? Like,
yeah.
So,
or Dubai.
Or, right, you know, right. No, like, not as adventurous as I make myself out to be. But
well, I wanted to challenge you a little bit because you talked about the ideal, you know, like reaching the certain limit. Why is that the ideal? Like, what makes you think that this is, if you're going to stay overseas, this is the way I have to do it. Why is that? What are you grasping at?
Ouch. I think that one thing I feel, I mean, when I'm here, I miss New York City, I miss my friends, I miss that community. When I'm in New York, I miss the Beijing community, I miss those friends. And I am just greedy. Like I want it all. Like I want, like the ideal is to have, to be in two places at once.
I'm discovering new things all the time. You are like the third person this season who has said, I want both, I want to straddle both.
It's dangerous. Like once you get a taste of it and like once you kind of develop the community here, then wherever you are, you feel some kind of longing for the thing that you left behind. So I think, right. So the ideal for me is to have both. I think also I'm so curious how people conceive of kind of their Beijing story. Cause I think for me, it has always been something with an accomplishment on the end that then ends the story.
So I'm interested, and again, I'm gonna push a little bit on this button because you said, see their Beijing story. Mm. I'm interested how you identify your migration / expat experience with it being a Beijing experience. Is that because you associate everything you've gone through with
the geographic and specific cultural entity that is Beijing, or do you not think about it, just don't think about it in terms of migration in general?
I think it's just because Beijing is my story.
Mm-hmm.
So I see it through that lens. And I think for me, like if I were to move to Shanghai, or if I think about my friends in Shanghai, like then...
It's very, very different there.
Well, it's very different, but then also it's then your migration story just becomes. your migration story is a story of being abroad. And mine to me is specific to being in Beijing.
You're really speaking my language here because this is the kind of migrant I am. I was just talking about this earlier. Am I going to feel the same way about being a migrant in another city as I am here?
Mm-hmm.
I've been here 10 years. I've said this before. When Chinese people ask me where I'm from, I'll say, well, I'm from Boston, but I'll say, where should Beijing end? I'm a Beijinger.
Right.
I absolutely feel like I'm a Beijinger.
I mean, I'm sure all the time you meet Chinese people who you've been in Beijing longer than they've
been
in Beijing.
Oh, of course I have.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's only, you know, there's 23 million people here. Only 8 million of them are quote, from here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everyone is a migrant here. It's fascinating. So what you're saying is resonating with me in a lot of ways is that I think and I say the word migrant a lot because I'm constantly trying to disassociate in my mind the idea of living in Beijing as that's the sole essence of the migration experience.
But at the same time, I mean, like people who move to Paris, if you then said, oh, how would you feel about living in Lyon? How would you feel about living in Marseille? They'd be like, no, I moved.
But what about Prague? or Morocco, or like I guess that's what
I feel like. There's like single purpose migrants,
yes,
who like move to a city for that city. People move, I mean, within the country,
yeah,
right? People move to Beijing,
yeah,
from within China to be in Beijing.
Tanya Crossman, who I had on here, she studies TCKs, Third Culture Kids, and she studies migration through the lens of raising children and families. She threw out a stat that I wasn't aware of. She had said that there were about 50 million of the 260 million, you know, migrants in the world, international migrants. There are something like 50 million people who are living somewhere with the intention of returning. So they are families living on post or in the foreign service or doing a rotation for their company overseas. And, you know, maybe they're raising their kids, but the intention is to go back where they came from.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of interesting you said it's that mission-driven migration.
Mm-hmm.
And are we mission-driven or are we just migrants? Like what makes us migrants? The fact that we wanted to move or the fact we're on a mission?
Right. Or is like the migrant part – I mean to be honest, like the migrant part to me now like I'm like, is that incidental to the broader mission? Like the mission happened to bring me out of America.
I think a lot of times – and see, now you're making me think. I think – you're pulling on a really important thread because I've met so many people here who don't think of themselves as migrants. They will use the word expat, and it's not a pejorative. They're not trying to put themselves above anyone, but they specifically think, I'm here for a certain amount of time. I'm going back and my job took me here.
Mm-hmm.
Or I'm having this experience because it's part of this other thing I'm doing. You know? But what I think is that that thinking insulates us from the reality, where the reality is, hey, you have migrated. Doesn't matter why. Doesn't matter what, you know, what your term is for. You have migrated. You are going through this thing. And when you think of, when you do it, think about it the way that you're talking about, I feel like it tends to separate or insulate you from that. And it makes you keep thinking, I'm of that. I'm from over there.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, it's funny when you ask that question, like, where is home? And I'm like I'm wearing New York City t-shirt.
Well, you know me. I'm always in my Boston gear.
Right. Yeah. And I think that there's something
– I feel like we should fight later.
Yeah, this is the most civil conversation.
I know.
I watched the Celtics lose this morning, so
– oh, I didn't check the score.
Oh, sorry.
That's all right.
There's something about coming from a place with an identity that also – like I was listening to – you had a woman on from Portugal.
Yeah.
And she – you were like, where are you from? And she's like, I'm from a town. And I was like, that's wild. Like, just that, like, she didn't even say the name of the, like, I was talking to someone yesterday who's from Russia, and I was just asking her, she just come back, and I was like, oh, like, where are you from? And it took her like 10 minutes to say the name of the place that she was from.
Yeah.
Cause it just didn't matter. Or like it felt
they
to
know,
her.
They know you won't know it. They feel like it's not important.
Mm-hmm. And I feel like it doesn't define, they don't define themselves by it in the way that like you define yourself as a Boston person. And that, I mean, that has like values inherent to it. And you, to some degree, like you were never looking to escape Boston. You didn't feel like, oh, I have to get out of here. And I more and more, I mean, when you're in New York, you either meet people from New York or people who have like come to New York and have made New York their thing. And I find it fascinating meeting people who are here in Beijing who wouldn't call themselves Beijingers, but also don't closely associate with the place that they're from. And they associate maybe with a, you know, culture in a different way. They think about it. They are part of an art community, or it's not a geographically based idea of community. And I think that when you coming from New York, I mean, I'll speak for myself, like coming from New York, where there's an idea of like what it means to be a New Yorker. And that is kind of imprinted on me. And so when I think about myself in the world, I think about myself as a New Yorker in the world. And there's always a degree to which I'm always either home in New York or I'm not home, like no matter where I would be. It would never be my home just because that identity is so strong.
Do you feel at home in New York when you go back?
Yeah.
Even to this day?
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel at home when you arrive back in Beijing?
Yes. I'm like an easygoing guy. Like, I go to Hong Kong and I'm like, ah, I feel at home here. You know, I'm like, what makes me feel at home in New York? I guess it's just the time that I spent there, right?
It's your place. You're familiar.
I'm familiar. I don't need to think when I'm there. If I'm going somewhere, I know how to get there. I know what I'm doing. So yeah, I feel at home there. And there's also, it's funny. I realized that I've become more of a New Yorker having lived abroad. That identity has become more important to me. And it manifests in weird ways in New York, where I'll be talking to people about like being a real New Yorker and they're like, what are you talking about?
You don't know what it means.
Or they're just like, why are you talking about this idea? Like you just kind of like live it. And I'm like, I find a need to like express it. This is
something that I brought up on the show before, but on our last trip home, my wife and I literally made a stop at a souvenir stand and we bought a huge bag full of Boston paraphernalia. I got mm-hmm. more t-shirts, more right. hats. I got a new jacket.
Right.
I got friggin' luggage tags. I mean, it's unbelievable. And my wife was, you know, she's not from Boston, but she mm-hmm. lived there. That's where we met. And she doesn't have the same feeling or affinity of Seattle, where she's originally from, or where she – her formative years were. But she really recognized something in me, and she said it was really incredible to see that in you and to be able to support it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, doing this podcast and talking to people has really helped me understand a lot of those things about myself. And what you said about feeling more like a New Yorker – after living overseas, I talk about that a lot because nothing makes you understand who you are and mm-hmm. what makes up your identity and what all the traits and characteristics and cultural ephemera that is you.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing makes you understand that than taking you out of where all that came from and
yeah.
plopping you down where everything about you is like, I'm different.
This just reminded me that when I moved here, one thing I really found fascinating was that so I moved here and I had a friend from college who brought me out, and he had some friends that I had met who were also like college buddies of his who I met who also moved out. And it was just super fascinating to see. And you just talk about being in a new place and how you're able to define yourselves however you want to define yourself. And it was just endlessly fascinating to see how people acted and how people became different people here than they were back in America. And it was
stuff that you have to keep separated or suppressed or mm-hmm. that isn't appropriate or doesn't service whatever you're doing, that all comes out here because you're in an environment where there are no rules for you.
Right, right, right.
There are no guideposts.
I mean, I think that's also – you talked about kind of that thrill-seeking thing. And maybe that's just part of being an expat. Like, I always compare it to like when you were in college and you'd visit a friend in a different college and you kind of knew that like – maybe I'll just – okay, I'll put this out. When I was in college and I would visit friends at different colleges and there was a slight sense of no one knows me here and I'm going to leave.
Right.
So I can kind of – the ways that I feel socially hemmed in my space is not happening here. Mm-hmm. And I just think back like when I was in college, whenever like something really like – someone like drunk drove into like a building and it was a kid from another school. It was someone from another place who was – there at my school, and that is something that like I got through quickly. I didn't like it, but like it was definitely kind of an alluring part of being in Beijing. And the fact that, you know, you can drink in the streets and there's just Beijing can indulge you. Or I guess, I mean, America is just so puritanical. I mean, I remember in high school going on an exchange trip to France, and we just spoke no French and drank beers from 7-Eleven like the whole time. Like that was our cultural experience abroad. I mean, it's cool, right? Like when you leave and you're allowed to kind of look at yourself almost for the first time, I think for a lot of people, if you take advantage of it, you can really get to know yourself better than you can when you stay in, you know, the bubble at home that you're used to.
So you've been going through this evolution and you're at this kind of inflection point. You're at the, you said off and on for 5 years now?
Yeah, total across the 5 year line.
5 year. So what's next?
So
Do you think beyond Beijing? Do you think just end here, go back to New York? I mean, what's your thought process like?
I guess there's a couple of things. One is that I've become more aware of like how little agency I have in my life. And how much...
Which is ironic, being in a place where you have so much privilege and agency.
Right, right, right. Yeah. But at the same time, I mean, you also recognize that there are winds blowing that you have no control over, mm-hmm. which is like freeing and nice to kind of acknowledge that I can make, recently I was like, I'm going to make a 5-year plan. And it was just like kind of like great and silly to kind of think about like, here's what I think. I mean, I always want to do it just to like in 5 years look back on this plan and be like, wow.
You just made me think of a good analogy. Like, you're right. Like, we have so much agency because we're overseas, not just because we're overseas, but because of the kind of the self-actualization and the awareness that comes from when you go outside your culture. Like, you're mm-hmm. like, oh, I have all of these options. Like, there is literally a world of opportunity for me
right.
that you don't understand or you don't even – not understand, but you're not aware of or it's not part of your life when mm-hmm. or, you know, when you're in your home culture. But at the same time, you also realize there are these huge waves that are rolling through the economy and geopolitical yeah. that you have nothing to do. So I think what you're making me think of is like, I have agency. I can ride the wave.
Sure.
But that's where my agency ends. I can't mm-hmm. control that wave.
Yeah. And you know what that does? It makes me more aware of like just the importance of like preparedness.
Yeah.
And kind of opportunities will present themselves and being able to take advantage of them. And like that's kind of the best planning you can do is just that understanding that you have this kind of know that like a wave is going to come. And when a wave comes that I want to hop on, I want to be ready to surf it. And I think that's something. So I just started a new job. I've been freelancing the whole time I've been here.
And in video?
In video. So like commercials, documentaries, music videos, news. And recently started a job at a news organization and found it. It's my first time being in a – it's my first time having a job.
Like, 9 to 5.
Yeah.
I hear you.
And it's also my first time being within an organization and being in an organization in a way where like as much as they're also paying me to work, they're also investing in me as someone who will – continue to be part of this organization long term.
They want to see you develop.
Right.
Yeah.
And
That's a different feeling. It's one thing to get a job and a paycheck. It's another thing to feel like you're part of something and they literally want to see you improve.
Right. Yeah. And people who I don't even know care about my success. And that has been really, I mean, it's like really bizarre. Like, I just like, it's like, it's just something I never really considered. And
it's also something that is kind of vanishing in today's economy. You know, it's people, you know, we talk about the gig economy, the buzzwords, whatever.
Right.
But in actuality, people normally don't stay at jobs for long periods of time. They bounce around. They see their skills or their personal abilities as a means from which to move up. And it doesn't have to be in the same place.
And right. And that idea of like being loyal to a company is almost like it sounds archaic. But I mean, so I work for ITV and like ITV News specifically.
British, right?
British, yeah. And it's a company that is old. And I mean, it's not old for the earth, but it's like old for companies.
Yeah.
Started in the 60s. And I think that there's some degree to which like working for a legacy media organization, they have a different, it's not working for BuzzFeed, right? It's not working for a startup.
There is a structure. There is a structure. A tradition. There is
and that,
a process.
Yeah, that structure has iterated over and over, and like they've done this and they've been doing it.
You mentioned offhandedly thinking about having a 5-year plan. What's so interesting is you came here. Your journey to come here was kind of not spur of the moment, but it was, you know, very much let's go see what's out there. And then it's been off and on for 5 years, freelance and finding your way. And now you're actually finding some stability. And that stability is happening overseas.
Yeah.
I'm really interested in what's going to happen next.
Right. Well,
we can't know.
We can't. Right.
But what I would like to do is I would like to have you in here maybe in a year or two, and you can tell me how your thought process has changed over what it means to be living overseas and whether or not this is something that is about being overseas or it's about being in your job or being in Beijing. You know what I mean?
I'd love to.
That is, I understand you are, that's what's happening with you right now.
It's interesting because it has changed my, I mean, the people in my company see me a certain, like the company's based in London. And they have a bureau in Beijing, and I work for the Beijing bureau.
So are you the Beijing guy, or are you a good video guy?
And like, am I the Beijing guy? Am I the video guy? And what does that mean long term? I mean, it's just like all of a sudden it's thinking about myself and kind of – I mean, it's a new wave that I'm on now, and it's kind of understanding that and thinking about it. And I mean, to be honest, it's like very cool and makes me kind of – look at the, I don't want to say the whole, like I look at things in a different way now because I have this idea that like, oh, this is a career as opposed to, I mean, like when you're freelancing, it's like anytime you finish a job, you're like, I could retire.
And then a week later, when you've blown through.
They pulled me back in.
Yeah.
So
I partied a little too much last month, so right. I need to work again.
Oh man. I mean, I do not miss that.
Yeah. Well, that's how it works.
But it was, I mean, it was interesting. I mean, talking about freelancing in Beijing, and also, I mean, one thing I appreciated when I came here is that I felt like when I first started working, and I was like 22, 23, I was just hot garbage at doing video. Like, I had no idea what I was doing. I was not prepared to do the job, both as a professional and as a, like, trades personally, a craftsman. I was not good at the craft and I was not good at business. And
well, you develop with the people here. I mean, to be fair, a lot of people doing stuff here, a lot of the companies up and coming, the development is such that they're not ready to do it either. They're not right. ready to even evaluate whether it's good. You know, they're new in that way of communicating.
Right. And I think, I'm curious if you're going to push back on this. I think that there is some degree that Beijing allows you to fail, or at least like, and I mean, I also wonder, like, as an expat, if there's a degree to which you feel like the stakes are slightly less high.
So I don't disagree with you. The push I'm going to make is the way you said Beijing again.
Damn.
And well, it's not a dig. I just think that when I think about that idea. That idea that you have more opportunity, you can fail more, that your, what the implication is that your skill set as a foreigner mm-hmm. in this place and the expertise you bring, whatever you think of it, mm-hmm. is of value or is of such value that you're going to get multiple opportunities because there is so many, there are so many people who need that. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? You, there are few, you're a limited resource.
Right.
There are few people like you here, no matter how good you are at what you do. And this used to be quite the trope in the migrant community here, the expat community here, is that you have all these quote losers who come here. They can't make it in the US, so they come right. overseas. And the Chinese would say this too. Mm-hmm. You know, the we get the foreigners who are, can't do very well. They're mm-hmm. the rejects. They bad social skills. They come over here and they, you know, marry beautiful Chinese women and they get good jobs because people don't come. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's changing now you said, it's more professional. But,
yeah.
but you know, that idea that that is just Beijing, I think is not true. I think you could go to Bangkok. You could mm-hmm. go to Kuala Lumpur. You could go to all these cities.
Right.
Bring your skill set and you would have the same kind of opportunity.
Well, I guess actually I almost mean it in the other way. Like less the opportunity side. Well, first of all, I want to say I do think that I use Beijing as a stand-in for
yeah.
expat living at large.
Yeah.
And
but it's also what you know.
Right. Yeah. I mean, if you could just edit that every time I say Beijing.
I'll just beep it.
Yeah.
It'll sound like you're cursing.
Right.
It's
yeah.
really just
every time you're yeah. but they're also I kind of like if I go back to New York and let's say I return to working in film, it is a film community that is a community. People talk, people know each other. So like if you do a shitty job, people know, and that has ramifications like in your home. Whereas when you come to Beijing, I felt like I could try things out. I mean, I don't want to say like, oh, I feel like I can like just be lazy and not give a shit. It was actually more that.
No, because if you don't do well, you're going to get dropped.
Right. And yeah. people still know you here. But yeah. like I felt as though I didn't feel as much career pressure to follow a certain path or like I did just all kinds of stuff, all kinds of different projects, like worked. I mean, I feel like everyone I know in Beijing has like worked at a startup or two. Because it just kind of happens.
Yeah, I'm raising my hand.
Yeah. And like that kind of freedom and that kind of feeling that, you know, like I guess I've always felt that to some degree, Beijing was like grad school for me, where it was, I finished undergrad and recognized that I was still kind of raw. And Beijing was a place where I could come and have access to lots of people doing lots of different things. Bring my skills.
Who are, ironically, based on what I just said, a lot of the people who do come here, who get sent here especially, mm-hmm. are at the top of their fields.
Right.
There's a lot of top people here.
I mean, also having access to like grad school, having access to like sharp people who are experts in their arena. And you talked about, to go back to kind of like that mission, I've always felt that being abroad for me was a way to kind of continue sharpening my skills, learning things, experiencing, I think really if I think about it, to then bring back home and to be there with a diverse array of, to be like a more fully formed version of myself. And I felt that when I'm in New York, I am channeled into the kind of paths that have been already channeled. And when I am here, I am able to be more free. And I think what that's meant for me is that, like, I think it's specifically like in film, in the way that, you know, in a, like, you watch a movie, the credits are like 1,000 jobs in the full credits. And I've kind of like done them all. And I wouldn't have had that opportunity if I were in New York. And
I went to an event, you know, last month where I met the Qatari ambassador. Like, I would never have access mm-hmm. to that kind of event or
right.
strata of people. Strata is so – that's a wrong word to use. Mm-hmm. But I would never have access to that kind of event if mm-hmm. I was in the U.S.
And I think that it makes you a broader-minded person. And maybe I'm not as skilled in any one thing as people I know who are in America who graduated school, got into a career, and have stayed in that career. Like, they are better at that particular thing than I am. But what I've gotten the privilege to do is kind of look at things from so many different angles and see how it fits together in a way that I think ultimately, I hope, prepares me for professional and personal development I just have a better foundation. So I think that's what being abroad has meant for me, is that ability to see things from obviously see things from a global perspective, but see things from the perspective of having me able to do different things.
Well, seeing things from a global perspective changes how you feel about opportunities and what you feel mm-hmm. about your own personal development. Because mm-hmm. you can see, oh, I can do this. This is a skill set I can bring over to here. Or this is right. a new thing I can learn.
Or when you see someone doing it, you're like, oh, I've done that. I know what they're trying to do. Mm-hmm. I can relate to them in a way that I couldn't.
I had a friend of mine said to me one time, I don't think this is so much about living overseas as about just kind of developing your career in general. But mm-hmm. but I remember I was looking at possibly going back to the US or, mm-hmm. you know, when my wife came here, my now wife, the deal was that she was going to give it a shot.
Okay.
You know, she was coming over and I told her, look, I just got a promotion at work. I'm working on several projects. I've kind of figured out what I'm good at mm-hmm. and they've entrusted me with doing some things. And I, you know, this is a long-term thing for me. But if you give me until I've been doing this for 1 year, if you don't like it here, we'll leave. And, you know, she wasn't coming at the beginning of the year. So she was coming over at the end of September. And I said, look, just give me 3 months. Okay. If by the end of the year, mm-hmm. you don't like Beijing, you mm-hmm. don't like China, I'll leave because, frankly, I want to be with you more than I want to be in China. Now, that's a big thing to say, and it's yeah. easy to say, and I kind of spent the summer emotionally dealing with that. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You know, I had to mentally prepare myself and think about, well, can I leave and where will I go? Right. And I kind of had a bit of a freak out at one point. I was talking mm-hmm. to a couple of friends of mine, one who does, you know, placement. He recruits people for jobs with Chinese companies, and I talked to another my best friend who now lives in Hong Kong, And I was just talking like, man, if I had to go back to the U.S., I wouldn't even know how to find a job. Like I haven't looked – I had – you know, before I'd moved from the U.S., I'd had a job for 6 years. Mm-hmm. And I moved to Beijing and I had the same job up until that point for 6 years. And I hadn't looked for work in 12 years in the U.S.
Right.
So I had no idea like where do I start? You know, what is my resume? Like, mm-hmm. you know, what do I do? And my buddy sat me down. Well, both of them sat me down and in different ways – my friend who was in Hong Kong said it the best. He said, dude, do you know what it is that you know?
Right, right.
Oh. And I didn't because mm-hmm. you spend your days seeped in this specific skill set, this specific profession, and mm-hmm. you don't understand. And I remember I gave a presentation to this startup accelerator contest. Mm-hmm. And I just talked about PR and marketing and the fundamentals. And here's what you need as a startup. Here's the basics you need to know. Mm-hmm. And they were all taking notes. And these are all smart people. Like I knew some of them and they're brilliant right. people. They're tech wizards and they're building these amazing products and doing some really interesting stuff. And I remember, you know, one of them came up to me and she says, can you send me that deck that you did? And I'm thinking to myself, this is literally the most basic stuff. Like, how do you not know this? And it dawned on me, well, they don't know this because they can't, because they're working on this other thing they're amazing right. at. They're amazing at that other thing. Mm-hmm. And I know this. And that was the first moment I understood, oh, I've built a career. I can do this.
The other thing is that, like, how many people have taken the time to build a whole new life?
Yeah.
Like, when you think about what it means to move abroad, it's like – there's almost everyone has moved here with, even if you have some kind of resources or a company helping you, still, you have to set up everything. You have to become a person again. And I think that when you have gone through that, like people are like, oh, could you live somewhere else? I'm like, I could live fucking anywhere.
Yeah.
Like, I've done it before. And like, any job that I, like when I went back to the States and like, right, like you're like, how do I find, like, you would figure out how to find a job immediately.
Right.
And you would find a job. And like, I had a lot of friends who.
Oh, you mean you did a decade in China in PR and marketing? Oh, we could use that in experience.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, like, the thing I found really interesting was that when I went back the second time, I went back, I felt like people go back in waves, or at least it feels that way. And I went back and a bunch of people came back at the same time. And I felt like a lot of the people who I came back with and myself, we're all kind of bummed out that, like, one, people weren't more impressed with our China experience.
Well, it was New York.
Right. Yeah. And I think it's something that we forget that, right, we're doing cool things here. People are still doing cool stuff
yeah.
back home, and they're there and they're networking. And you kind of – you have to take that career step back. But then I felt that once you open the door and let me in the room, I know I have been in a foreign country freelancing, figuring out everything for myself. There's no situation that I can then be presented with where I feel overwhelmed or that like, oh God, I don't know if I'll be able to figure this out.
Nothing's going to make you feel that out of depth.
No. Yeah. And you just kind of like when you make that move, you've done something kind of momentous and you don't notice it because you have to. But it's actually, I think it really like sharpens you as a person. So that's something I think about. I mean, I think there's a lot, like you said, like, you don't know. There's so much we don't realize that we are gaining. And I mean, it's like, we haven't even talked about like language at all.
Yeah.
And what it means. I mean, I came here with no Chinese.
Well, you know, I'm actually going to stop you there because now we're going to get into part three and we don't want to belabor our poor listeners because this has been a fascinating conversation. And, you know, you're right. We could go on because this is an endless conversation. Just expats in general, migrants in general, we have to think about all these things. And, mm-hmm. and you know, I do want to have you back and you will have you on, and especially in a year or two, and we can talk about your whole career status and how it's made you change your thought process about where you are and why you are.
Can't wait till I'm homeless.
Yeah. but I want to thank you. You've taken time out of your day and I appreciate you coming in and sharing your story.
Sure.
Well, there you have it. Thanks again to Gabe for coming onto the show. I had so much fun chatting with him. And thanks to all of you for listening, especially all the new folks been finding the show over the last few weeks. I hope you'll connect with me and share your reactions and topic ideas. You can reach me by email at mike.shaw@migrationmedia.net. You can also find me on Twitter. I'm at CAX2000. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you next week.